Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, September the 17th, 264th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, sort of, kind of, is Mark Lovelace.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing dandy. But you're in D.C., so you're probably sweltering, huh?
Probably. I'll know when I get there. So. Yeah, well. So I can't really say right now how I'm doing at the time people are listening to this.
Star Trek could do it for seasons.
Yeah. Star Trek, they just say it's a temporal anomaly. So.
Yeah.
That's a good catch-all for everything.
And it works for me. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about why Mark is back on the East Coast, some of the things that are going on back there in association with the Klamath River system. Okay. One specific part of the Klamath River system, but we'll keep it broad, keep it open, keep it intriguing until we come back.
Music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. But before we do our quote this afternoon, I've got choices for you.
Okay.
All right. Dieting or dessert?
Dessert. Let's start with dessert.
Not even hesitation, huh?
Yeah. Dessert before diet.
This is from Peg Bracken, who wrote the I Hate to Cook book in 1960. Quote, cheese for dessert is rather like Paradise Lost in that everybody thinks you ought to like it, but still you don't notice too many people actually curling up with it. Oh, my. So why are you out of town today?
Well, Supervisor Sundberg and I are going to be in Washington, D.C. for lobbying in support of the Klamath Dams legislation, the new legislation that's been introduced this year to try to enact the KBRA, the KHSA, and the new Upper Basin Agreement. These are the three linked agreements that, if implemented by Congress, will result in removing the four lower dams on the Klamath River to help benefit the salmon and other anadromous fish.
When there's water running in the river.
Well, it'll provide for more water running in the river, and that's the whole goal. So,
geez, can you do the same thing on the eel? Now that we can just kind of walk from shoreline to shoreline and not hit any water, it's
The eel is looking pretty
dry,
scary. Yeah. It's hydrologically disconnected at this point. No longer meets the ocean.
Ooh, so. You've been reading, huh? In anticipation. Yeah.
There's your word for the day. Yeah. Write that one down. So. Yeah.
I can't get close enough even to misspell that one. Mark, it's interesting, I think, for a lot of folks where we're hearing dam removal in our part of the country, and yet there are folks like in the southern part of the state that don't have dams, haven't put dams in, and if they had dams in, would probably be in a better situation than what they are now.
Well, so
how can these two truths exist?
So let's start with a reminder about what the Klamath Dams are. These are old, antiquated dams that were built. I think the oldest one is 90 years old, pushing 100, and they've been built out over. Yeah, I think the newest one's 60 years old, something like that. So they've been built out over time, but they're so old. And they were built for one purpose and one purpose only, which was to provide electricity. They do not provide water storage. They do not provide water supply. They don't provide flood control. They don't do any of those things, and they can't.
There must have been a rash of those, because that's what the Eel River diversion is for the Russian River. Same thing, right? PG&E shutting it off, developing hydropower. Now it's feeding lakes downstream,
yeah.
But that wasn't the initial reason for it.
I believe the Potter Valley project, the Eel River, I'm not as versed on, but I believe it provides both. But with the Klamath, no part of it is providing storage for water supply.
Just running through turbines, so to speak.
Yeah. And when you do that, you have to maintain water pressure through the depth of the water. And yeah, they only can generate if there's water spilling through. And so because of that, they can't be used for flood control. The flood control is all done at the upper end of the basin, up at Klamath Lake itself. And so when water is released from there, it overtops the dams below and provides more water to the river down below. But so these dams...
Are they just antiquated and inefficient?
They're incredibly inefficient. In fact, they're so inefficient that it would be cheaper for PacifiCorp, the company that owns them, to build brand new state-of-the-art dams or new, you know, generate power through any of another, you know, number of other means. Wind power, you know, solar power, whatever. They could generate that energy far more efficiently with brand new facilities of any kind than they could through repairing and relicensing these ones. To relicense them, they would have to provide for fish passage, which these do not have. There's no way for salmon to get around them. Yeah, they'd have to do so many other things to address all of the environmental problems from these, the water quality problems. The water gets so toxic behind the dams that there are warnings for people to not touch it.
The blue-green algae stuff that we have around here?
Is yeah. It's just the water is still, the water gets hot, and the water collects all of the nutrients that, you know, nutrients sounds like a good thing, but when you get the nutrient level above what would be normal, you get all sorts of things like blue-green algae and other things breaking out in the water. So we need to keep that in mind, that while California is in a drought, these dams do nothing for that. The existence of these droughts, of these dams, add nothing. Removing them takes nothing away.
Well, hopefully it does something.
But in terms of terms of water supply, in terms of addressing the drought.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW three times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're talking shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept of dam removal is something that's intriguing. Dam putting in is something that's intriguing. When rivers are adjusted, I guess that would be kind of the general phrase. Obviously, there's impacts because that's why things happen, whether they're lakes or like you were talking about with the Klamath. One of the arguments that I found always kind of intriguing, and I'll use the Eel because that's kind of my my flashpoint, is the discussion about, well, look at the economies that have grown up around the Russian River. If we stop that diversion on the Eel, look at the da-da-da-da-da. Okay, you could say that. You could use that argument with anything. Are there some impacts that are more valuable than other impacts when it comes to water?
Well, here's the thing that's interesting about that aspect with the Klamath, along with so many others. These dams are so old that at the time that they were built, none of those studies had to be done. There was no analysis of what's the impact going to be on fisheries downstream or on tribal communities downstream or on water quality or other aspects downstream. It wasn't necessary to study it.
Probably in some areas, downstream wasn't mapped all the way to the ocean either.
And now that they're taking the dams out in a post-National Environmental Policy Act and California Environmental Quality Act era, you know, since the 70s when both of these were enacted, now all of those impacts have to be studied. And so part of it is looking at what is the environmental impact of removing the dams. And there are, you know, anytime you change an ecosystem, you know, they changed it putting them in, and now there is a an ecosystem, a healthy one or unhealthy one, however, you know, but removing the dams will cause an impact.
Things have adapted.
It will affect what's there one way or another. So they have to study that, and they have to look at the...
So how do you do that without having a baseline?
And that's exactly it. They're looking at a false baseline.
Or estimated.
And so the folks, there are people who own property along the reservoirs for these four dams. There are people that live up there that enjoy a boating community, that have houses with docks out on the water. And I recently, a few months ago, drove up there, and even though those dams are very isolated and you can't get through from one to the other, and so it was quite the drive. But it was very, very meaningful for me to go up and actually see these communities and see the people that live there and talk to a few people and understand that, yes, there are people who will be affected, negatively affected by this, and frankly, whose way of life and quality of life will be diminished by removing these dams. And we can see that, but we can't see, and it's harder to see, the folks whose quality of life, whose way of life was diminished over the last 100 years from the existence of these dams. We don't have, you know, a pre-existing condition to look at before we change it. And so we'll be restoring that for all of the tribal communities that depend upon these fisheries, and for the fishing industry that depends upon this, these fisheries.
Now, fish tend to be pretty adaptive. I'm laughing because when we replaced the towers a couple of years ago here, folks at the county wanted us to do a bird kill study and compare the difference mm-hmm. between the tower that is now and the tower that will be replaced, even though it's the same tower, same height, same color, same configuration. Mm-hmm. Same. That one became a side issue and mm-hmm. wasn't done. So I'm wondering, as we're looking at fish and these other, how do you develop a reference point to even know, is it a net plus or is it a net minus? Mm-hmm. Or is it just change? And change happens, okay. And then you try to figure out some way to make those folks who have built their livelihood around mm-hmm. and the adaptation whole again.
Yeah, it could be very difficult, very complicated to do this kind of analysis. And the full environmental impact study that was done for the removal of the Klamath Dams is in something like 10 volumes. They take up about 3 feet of shelf space.
Huge.
In
yeah.
our board offices.
And that's on microfiche.
Yeah. Well, or one CD. How's that? Yes, literally 3 feet of shelf space, a huge, huge set of binders, a tremendous amount of information that has to be gone through. They have to, you know, use lots of different experts to be able to get at exactly the question that you're looking at. But we can also look at it in more fundamental ways, just that, you know, like in talking to fishermen and representatives from Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and so many other folks over the years that I've talked to on this project that can just say, look, I can just give you a list of all of the fishing boats that used to be here that are gone. Yeah, that all the folks, the ocean fishermen that used to be.
But all those didn't happen 70 years ago, snap your finger.
But over time, yeah.
Well, I mean, you have PFMC. You look at Humboldt Bay.
Yeah.
And you know, talk to Jimmy and mm-hmm. come up with a whole bunch of folks that aren't doing it anymore. Is it because these dams were on the Klamath?
But there's a long list of factors, but we can also look at.
But it could be contributing factors.
Yeah, contributing factors, yeah. And so you want to look at those cumulative impacts. You want to recognize that you can't just tease out one thing and say, this is responsible for everything. You've got a whole world that's changing all the time, including, you know.
Stuff we don't know anything about, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the fish stuff.
Yeah. So, and, you know, and anytime you're talking about anadromous fish, you've got to recognize they live part of their life cycle in the rivers and part of their life cycle in the ocean. And so they can be affected by both. And there can be cyclical things in the oceans that affect their survival rate. And
so with all the untold millions of dollars mm-hmm. that were spent in doing all of this, would it have been more beneficial, wiser perhaps, just to say, okay, everybody who's got something around these lakes, here's $1 million. Thank you very much. We're going to be taking this thing out. Sorry, but you know things are changing. And here's your buy-off, so to speak. Save how many years? Decades? Mm-hmm. Get this thing taken care of and move on, rather than the lengthiness of the time and all the studies. And then it seems like it's kind of gotten bogged down in trying to find what you really can't find.
Well, the affected communities along the lakes have, you know, they are folks that I'm very sympathetic to them. And as I said, taking the time to actually drive up there and visit their communities was very meaningful to me, to, you know, to not dismiss those impacts. But there's others too.
We'll continue in a sec. Mm-hmm. It's 3:30.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept of everybody getting even treatment, I don't think that ever is going to, it can't. I mean, life isn't even or fair or anything else. But when it's government imposed and then government reimposed in a different slant or a different emphasis, that I think is what probably rankles a lot of folks. So getting back into this impact, the economic impact of pulling these dams out for the communities that built up around them, is there any balancing factor that the federal government was looking at or the group?
Well, Siskiyou County, which is where these communities are, had been very opposed to the agreements. They
aggressively opposed.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that, you know, there's these agreements accomplish great things for the lower basin, and now with the latest agreement, the Upper Basin Comprehensive Agreement, they accomplish great things for farmers and ranchers and tribes in the Upper Basin too. But there is a middle segment there where, yeah, there is an impact there that, you know, we have to recognize. Part of the discussion around this, separate as kind of a sidecar to the agreement, not a part of the agreement, but related to it, had been some portion of funding to go to Siskiyou County to provide for mitigation of economic impacts, similar to the money that the County of Humboldt got as a part of the Headwaters.
Yes, I'm seeing Headwaters exactly, yeah. And I'm hoping that they get X number a year over a period of time instead of one lump sum that can then go poof.
Yeah. Well, ours didn't go poof. We actually
I understand. You know, well, this one, but yeah, Redwood 2 did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just some way so that future generations get the benefit from it as well as the current ones.
So the Upper Basin had been a very active part of the negotiations. There had been people who had been very opposed to the agreements. And I think more ideologically and fundamentally opposed to the agreements rather than to the actual details of the agreements. Plus, a lot of the farmers and ranchers in the Upper Basin above Klamath Lake, above and around Klamath Lake, they were in the process of water rights adjudication, figuring out who actually has senior water rights and who has junior water rights, so that when there are years of not enough water, who gets first call. And they basically, through the process of negotiation, had originally kind of, you know, put all their put all their eggs in that basket. That was what they thought was going to, you know, secure this for them. And as we know from the summer before last, that didn't work out. When the adjudication was completed, it turned out that these folks had junior rights to the federal government and to the tribes. And so in low water years, they would get nothing, and that actually happened 2 years ago. The adjudication came through at the same time that they had a low water year. And that essentially brought them back to the table. And when Senator Wyden from Oregon had hearings on the Klamath Dam's issues, he really had a very targeted line of questioning going to that, speaking to the representatives from the Klamath tribes, from the Upper Klamath Basin, about asking them, well, you made agreements with a number of different parties, but not with these, you know, farmers in the Upper Basin, and why is that? And their answer was, well, we made agreements with people that would negotiate as a part of this comprehensive deal. People who agreed to be signatories to the, to the dam removal.
They were in the process, yeah, and the other guys were standing outside.
To both of these. Yeah. You know, we would negotiate with people who would come to the table. And then Senator Wyden asked a follow-up question, essentially, so what would it take for you to negotiate some portion of your water with those, with these folks? And said they'd, if they come to the table and support the agreements, we'll negotiate with them. And that is what this third agreement, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement, does, is it resolves among the parties up there some of these water issues, and gets at some of the details, some things that were laid out in the Klamath Basin Restoration Act, or KBRA, about how some of this new water supply would be generated, and gets to how they're going to retire some water rights here, how they're going to increase some flows over here, how they're going to do things to improve water quality in these sections. It's very targeted, a lot of detail on specific forks of specific contributing streams.
Does any of that, Mark, translate down to the lower reaches of the river system?
Yes, all of this is to generate more water for the entire system. And, you know, that's one of the things that's really interesting about these agreements is that by resolving some of the upper basin issues, they're able to generate more water to benefit everybody. They basically pull back water in places where it's not needed, where it's being wasted, so that the water can be put to the best use possible for all parties concerned. And a few months ago, I was at the signing ceremony for this new agreement, and one of the most meaningful moments of that was when one of the representatives of the Upper Basin ranchers, who had been, you know, had not come to the table before, had not been friendly to the whole process, when he was speaking, he said, through this process of negotiation, I found a new friend in Don Gentry, the chairman of the Klamath Tribes, and he gave him a hug there in front of the whole group. And that connection that these two folks had achieved spoke volumes about what's really gained through this is not only the technical details of what's in the agreement, it's the fact that all of these diverse parties have been brought to the table and are now working together and respecting each other's
rights. Relationships that come out of it.
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. And Mark, you'd said that you and Ryan were both back in D.C. as this show airs, mm-hmm. In order to help just kind of make sure that this thing continues mm-hmm. along. Why two?
Well, Ryan has been our, since he came onto the board, he has been the county's rep on the Klamath Basin Coordinating Council, which was an entity that was set up after the agreements were first signed. And he, had, prior to that, though, Supervisor Duffy had been really the board's core person on this through the signatures on the first two agreements. At that point, she knew she was going to be stepping off the board, and so she asked me to take up those issues as kind of an interim so that there'd be a bridge between the two. So I took up those issues and became the county's rep for that period of time, and then became the alternate on these issues along with, in support of Ryan. The meetings on this, because the Klamath Basin is so huge, the meetings have happened anywhere from, Eureka all the way up to Klamath Falls and Wairika and everywhere in between.
I remember the hearing of the trips.
Yeah. And so there's a tremendous amount of travel that's been involved, a lot. And it's been really difficult for any one person to cover the whole thing. And so So he and I have both been involved in this issue for quite some time now. A number of years back, Supervisor Sundberg and I went to D.C. to lobby on the first legislation that was introduced by Congressman Thompson, and former Supervisor Duffy came with us. She was staff at that point. She'd been picked up by the county as technical staff to help with the implementation. And so the three of us went as a team at that point, along with our lobbyists from Waterman Associates in D.C. that have been really, really excellent on this. And it really was tremendously valuable to have a team in that way at that time. Because when you're going to have, as we had like 16 meetings over 2 days, you're going to meet with a lot of different people. And a huge piece of that is just, can you connect with that person? And when you have three people, you have three different opportunities to connect. When you have two people, you got two different opportunities to connect. If you only have one person, they're the whole show. And if they don't,
sometimes that's not a good show to go to. Yeah.
And so we each bring different strengths. We each bring different experience with this issue and different opportunities to be able to, and plus different pre-existing relationships. I followed up last year when I was testifying to the Senate committee on these agreements, Senator Wyden's hearings that he held. I did more lobbying as a part of that too, had another round of meetings in support of that. And so we each bring something to the table, and by having a team effort, it also shows that this isn't just one supervisor there carrying their issue, it's that we're there on behalf of the entire Board of Supervisors and the entire county of Humboldt.
Well, have a safe travel back home.
Thank you.
And while you're back there too, I should talk about going in the lion's den. We've been Talking Shop with Mark Lovelace. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.